Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Friday, May 15th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll get a preview of the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy Dance Concert. And we'll highlight Caroline Van Hemert and Patrick Farrell's film Northern Lights about their 4,000-mile journey from Bellingham to Kotzebue. We'll find out about the Special Olympics Torch Run, and we'll learn about Saturday's Family Farm Day benefit for the Juno Co-op Preschool. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon. It's currently 65 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nation in northwestern British Columbia, Canada, has rejected more than $1 billion deal that would have paved the way of a liquefied natural gas terminal to be built in its traditional territory. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, band members say it's not about the money.
The Laxquallams members voted against the project in three separate community meetings. The last was held this week in Vancouver. The mayor of the band says he hopes the vote sends a clear message that this is not about money, but about the environment and the culture. A yes vote would have secured consent for the construction of a terminal on an island south of Prince Rupert. Pacific Northwest LNG was proposing to build a pipeline and terminal. But some band members, like Aaliyah White and her father, voted in favor of the project.
You know, I was terrified to get my answer, but it's my vote, it's my decision, my vote counts. And it's a yes.
But most members of the Laxquallams were concerned about the project's impact on the marine ecosystem near the site of the terminal. Members say they're open to business and development, just not near the proposed island site. The British Columbia government says it's reached pipeline benefits agreements with 28 First Nations across the province, but along the proposed pipeline site, only five have publicly announced they've signed deals with the government. Meanwhile, at least one energy lawyer says the rejection doesn't necessarily mean an end to the project. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Alaska's lieutenant governor says his state needs a larger role in permitting mines across the border in the Canadian province of British Columbia. Byron Malott carried his message to government leaders during a recent tour. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Malott met with British Columbia's Minister of Mines and the Environment about potential threats from transboundary mines. At least a half dozen are planned in watersheds that feed salmon-producing rivers important to Alaska's traditional fisheries. He said the talks were cordial, but he let provincial leaders know Alaska is serious about protecting water quality.
Large mine development along those transboundary watersheds cannot be taken casually, and any engagement we have with British Columbia cannot be out of courtesy on their part.
Mine critics include many of the affected area's tribal governments. They want a say in the mine permit process, and while Alaska has some opportunities, it's rarely included such concerns. Lieutenant Governor Malott says that's about to change.
I would hope that we would have the most open and transparent processes and involvements with the public possible.
Alaska already has some input into environmental permitting. After the meeting with Malott, one British Columbia official said the state could also become part of decisions affecting mine construction. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Navajo Nation's new leader says language preservation, job creation, and higher education are among priorities. Russell Begay talked about the future of the tribe after being sworn into office this week in Arizona. In his speech, given in both Navajo and English, Begay also addressed fighting diabetes by producing more traditional foods. Some of the loudest cheers from the crowd came as Begay vowed to enforce sovereignty on issues such as tribal jurisdiction and water rights.
We ask Congress to recognize our Aboriginal rights to these waters so we can raise our economy through agriculture, ranching, business development, and provide basic water needs to every individual on our nation. Today, we are prohibited from accessing our own water that flows through our land, and that is a road we must no longer travel on.
Begay ended his speech by urging unity throughout the tribe, including by the council and the president's office. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Friday, May 15th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host on this beautiful Friday afternoon. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And folks, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is coming to town. They are going to play the festival finale tomorrow night, Saturday, 7:30 at Centennial Hall. Our very own Jeff Brown had a chance to talk with them from down south. Here's their conversation.
I'm on the phone with Glenn, the Kid Marhefka from the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy Band. They're performing in concert Saturday night as part of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival. Glenn, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Thanks for having me.
So first of all, you've been together since 1993. You've got 10 albums.
Yeah, we've been really lucky. We've had a nice long career, and we're really happy about it, and we're still out there playing.
How'd the group get started?
Well, the group was started by our singer, Scotty Morris, and him and our drummer were the first two guys. Then they started the group and decided they wanted to play jazz and swing music and started adding some horns. And that's where I came into the picture, and we added a horn section and just kind of moved forward. And actually, our singer, Scotty, he had gotten to an Albert Collins concert, and Albert signed a poster to Big Bad Voodoo Daddy from Albert Collins. So when Kurt, our drummer, and Scotty got together, Scotty was like, "What do you think about Big Bad Voodoo Daddy? I had this poster signed with that name." And Kurt was like, "That's a really cool name." And they sort of started the group, and we just found a bunch of guys that all liked to play swing and jazz music. A lot of us grew up listening to that in their houses, our parents played that kind of music over records and things like that.
I remember records.
Yep, records are cool. They still have them.
Your music's been described as Dixieland, swing, big band, jump blues. How would you describe it?
I think we're sort of a classic American music. We play music from the early 1920s all the way up until the 1960s, that style of jazz and swing music. And I think we do a little bit of everything. I would say it's classic American music.
From your YouTube video, you have a lot of fun. It seems like you got a good choreography going with you.
Yeah, we definitely have fun. I mean, we have five horns on stage, piano, bass, drums, guitar, and Scotty's our guitarist and singer. And we just have a really good time. It's a really great show band, super fun to watch live. We've done almost 3,000 concerts over the years, so the band's just really great on stage, and it's super fun.
What are some notable bands that you got your inspiration from?
So I grew up listening to people like Miles Davis and Clifford Brown and Doc Severinsen and you name it, Louis Armstrong, all that, all this great trumpet players and jazz music. But amongst the whole group, there's a huge wide range of musicians and bands that we listen to, anywhere from the Beatles to Tom Waits to, Duke Ellington to Count Basie, you name it, Randy Newman. It's just kind of all over the map.
Would you like to describe your work with symphonies?
We play a great, it's a really fun show with the symphony. We get on stage with the whole orchestra behind us, and we do all the music's arranged for the whole entire orchestra, and it's just really fun to play. It's got a big sound, and it's super fun.
But you've got seven members coming this Saturday night at the Centennial Hall.
We'll actually have nine of us on stage. So when we tour on the road, we actually have five horns. There are seven of us in the band that have been together this whole time, and when we tour, we bring two additional horns. So those guys play with us all the time on the live show.
What is your touring schedule like?
It changes from year to year. I mean, our busiest years, we've done 200 to 300 concerts. We probably do about 100 to 150 concerts a year right now, so we go out quite a bit. We travel all over. We go all over the world, and it's sometimes it's pretty busy. We're just starting to get busy again right now, so the rest of the year will be pretty busy.
About what percentage of your music is original versus classics?
Percentage of original to classic, we do a lot of original music. We started out mostly doing all original. We only did a couple cover songs, but we did do a whole tribute album to the music of Cab Calloway a few years back. So there's quite a few covers that we do from that. So I would say, depending on what we do on the set, I would say it's probably a little bit more original music, probably 60% original music and probably 40% cover.
Is there any such thing as a typical performance?
I don't know about a typical performance. All our performances are just super fun, high energy. The band, no matter what, just goes up there and just keeps their all. And I really think that the band has developed over the years into a great Joe band, and it's super fun.
You want to go over the list of the band members and their instruments, please?
We have, in our rhythm section, we have Scotty Morris. He's our guitarist and vocalist, and he's the leader of the band. We have, on drums, we have Kurt Sodergren. On bass, we have Bert Shoemaker, and piano, we have Joshua Levy. And then in the horn section, we have myself on trumpet, Glenn Marhefka. We have Carl Hunter on tenor and alto saxophone and clarinet. We have Andy Rowley on baritone saxophone. And then the two additional horns are Alex Henderson on trombone and Anthony Bonsera on trumpet.
What can we expect to see on Saturday night?
We're going to just do a really fun show. We're probably going to do songs from all of our albums. We have, I think, 11 albums out. So we're kind of do music from all of the different albums from the beginning all the way up into our most current album, which is Rattled and Bones.
Have you been to Alaska before?
We have. We played in Fairbanks and we played in Anchorage, but we have not played in Juneau before. We're pretty excited to be coming up there for the festival.
I'm talking with Glenn the Kid Marhefka about the big band Voodoo Daddy Dance, which is coming up on Saturday, May 16th at 7:30 at the Centennial Hall. Glenn, how'd you get the name The Kid?
Well, when I first joined the band, I was in my early 20s, and I just looked really young. And we went out to dinner, I remember, while we were up on the road up in San Luis Obispo, and all the guys in the band ordered some sophisticated food, and I think I ordered a hot dog and fries. And our singer, Scotty, was like, yeah, you are The Kid. And they just, he started calling me that on stage, and it sort of stuck, and all the fans started calling me The Kid.
All right, Glenn, looking forward to seeing you on Saturday at Centennial Hall at 7:30 as part of the Juneau Jazz and Classics Festival.
Cool, we're looking forward to being up there.
All right, thanks so much.
Cool, thanks a lot.
And here is some Big Bad Voodoo Daddy.
Now if you see my baby is oh so fine. She's long and lean and never mean. She tastes like cherry wine and she's my baby. She drives me crazy. Now a love like mine should never be denied. I wanna hug and kiss her. Lord, I really miss her all the time. All the time. So I said, why me? Why? Why'd she have to run away from me? It's a mystery. Why? I love her more today. I loved her yesterday. And I thought that she'd come back to me. Why me? Why? that she have to run away from me? It's a mystery why I love her more today than I loved her yesterday, when I thought that she'd come back to me. Why'd she have to run away from me? It's a mystery why I loved her more today than I loved her yesterday. I thought that she'd come back to me.
Support comes from Alaska Canopy, now accepting applications for the 2015 summer season. More information at alaskacanopy.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Friday, May 15th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 17 minutes past the top of the hour, and I have been joined by the stars of the film Northern Limits, Caroline Van Hemert. Welcome, Caroline.
Thank you.
And Patrick Farrell. Welcome, Patrick.
Great. Thanks to be here.
And they've also been joined by the Alaska Wilderness League's Tongass campaign manager, Dan Kirkwood. Did I get that right, Dan?
Oh, howdy, Scott. Thanks.
Thanks for coming in, all of you, out of this beautiful, beautiful Friday afternoon. Dan, let's start with you. What is the Alaska Wilderness League, and how did you find these two in the film Northern Limits?
So the Alaska Wilderness League is a national organization. We're actually headquartered in D.C., but I think we play a really unique role in that we are the conservation voice in D.C. for all Alaskan issues. So we have a permanent presence on Capitol Hill to make sure that representatives from all around the country hear about the public lands in Alaska and the people all around the country who care about those lands.
Okay.
And the Alaska Wilderness League, we're active from the Tongass, where I work, all the way up to the Arctic. Of course, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, an incredibly iconic part of the world, but also the Arctic Ocean and the lesser-known incredible landscapes in western Alaska that very few people get to visit. And that's why Pat and Caroline's journey, exploration, really appealed to me, because they've covered the whole of it. They've been through the whole thing and seen places that even those of us who live here never get to see, and done it in a really incredible way. So really excited to be able to bring them to Juno and to share their film.
And that's going to be showing tonight. Is that correct?
Yeah, the film's tonight at 7 o'clock at the Rockwell Ballroom upstairs. So I think people might need a little break from the sun, and we'd love to provide that, a chance to kind of get out from underneath the sun, come inside. It's $10 to get in the door, but with that you get a free beer and see this incredible presentation.
And it's not so much of a fundraiser, you were saying, right? It's more of just sort of a...
We wanted to sponsor this and put it on for the community. It's an incredible journey. It's a really cool adventure. And at the Alaska Wilderness League, we just wanted to share this and have a little gathering here at the kind of the start of the summer, get people really excited about getting out on their own adventures, see some of the incredible landscapes of the Inside Passage that these guys traveled through, and then see some of the stuff that's up over the mountains as you head north.
Okay, well, I'm excited to see the film and hear more about it. Caroline and Patrick, could you start by giving us an outline of your journey?
Sure, yeah. So maybe before we start, I'll just make a quick plug for coming tonight, that there's a combination of film as well as speaking, so you'll get lots of live stories as well. So please do come out and join us. So we started this journey down in Bellingham, Washington, in Puget Sound, and initially rode the Inside Passage, and from there traveled up and over the mountains into the Yukon Territory by ski and packraft. and from there continued north, getting into the Yukon River and then into the Tombstone Mountains, hiking and packrafting much of that, and making our way north to the Arctic coast. And I'll let Pat explain the rest of it from there.
Yeah. So then we, once sort of reaching another coast, unlike southeast, we walked along the shores of the Arctic coast into back into Alaska, sort of crossing the border there, and came into Anwar, and that's where we cut into the Brooks Range and then proceeded to traverse across the Brooks Range, finishing in Kotzebue. And we finished just as sort of the snow was flying there at the end of the summer. So
last summer, last year, 2014?
No, this was in 2012, so it's been a couple of years. Yeah, so we started in spring and finished in fall, so we tried to crunch it all into a single season, so we did it over the course of about 6 months.
All right, let's back up a little bit to Bellingham. What were you doing in Bellingham, right? That's where you started, and what inspired you to do this?
Yeah, well, we early on decided we wanted to, we were at a junction in our lives where we thought we could break away and do a big trip. And we'd spent a lot of time down in Bellingham, lived down there, gone to school on a off a sailboat and done a lot of trips there, but never sort of done the whole Inside Passage in its entirety. So we thought this is a good excuse to sort of put that together. And so we started down there in March, trying to give us time before things froze up north. So.
And part of the appeal with the Inside Passage as well is that we have a cabin just north of here, outside of Haines, and so we were really excited to link a place we'd spent a lot of time before in Bellingham with a place that we really love up north and this neck of the woods.
And let's see, rowboat, skis, pack raft, foot, and canoe. We get them all?
Correct. So, yeah, there were some logistics involved in making sure that we had all the correct equipment in the right places as much as possible anyway.
Yeah.
I bet.
Yeah, and a lot of it, too, we're trying to move quickly and things. We pretty much just relied on the Postal Service, an exception of a few rare places. So we would just mail our provisions onward and then pick up food and just keep moving. So, like in this region, you know, it'd be Ketchikan, then stop in Juneau, stop at our cabin, and then from our cabin on Lynn Canal, make it all the way over to Whitehorse, resupply there, and so on. So it's a sort of neat connection, too, to different communities and people along the way, and with each region came all these unexpected, which we need to talk about in this presentation tonight. I mean, you hear about sort of a few of these iconic parks, but boy, there's so much that sort of fills the cracks between them. That was just such a treat on this trip.
I bet.
And I guess another thing we could mention, too, in terms of maybe not so much inspiration, but the type of travel we chose to do. So a lot of our background was in mountaineering and doing more technical types of trips. And this time we thought it would be kind of a neat challenge to figure out just how far we could go, which meant taking on a very different approach, going more or less light and fast a lot of the way and leaving some of the more technical gear behind.
Sure. I don't know about you two, but when I plan a trip, I look at a map and I'm like, oh, that's like 3 inches. That's not that bad. Mm-hmm. I wonder what it was like for you looking at the map and planning it. And now looking at it in retrospect, how did the planning reconcile with the real deal?
I guess one image that you'll probably hear us mention tonight is when we were tacking all the maps to the wall. So Pat was working on this, and he's a builder by trade, so he's usually pretty good with his angles and whatnot, and he was tacking these maps to the wall, and he stepped back and couldn't figure out why they were so crooked, and it took a minute to realize that he hadn't really figured in the curvature of the Earth on a scale of that we were working with. And so I think those kinds of things made us stop and realize just how maybe ambitious our itinerary was without really intentionally doing that from the outset. So that kind of gives one sense of our realization of distances.
Yeah, and a lot of people, in bringing up the trip, I mean, we definitely went into it a bit like, here's what we're going to try to do. We're going to start in March and just go as far as we can with the realization that maybe we'd get stuck in Juneau, maybe we'd get stuck in the middle of the Yukon, but if all worked out, boy, we'd love to make it to the Arctic, and just one thing led to another, and it did work out. But worst case scenario is we'd have a heck of a trip, even if it was cut a little short. So in that sense, it was pretty neat, but having to go into it with a bit of humility, knowing that, gosh, one twisted ankle could slow you down quite a bit.
So where do you get then when people plan trips, I think we think of, well, I'm going to go from here to here, and you find natural, we'll do the Inside Passage, we'll go from here to the Arctic. And I think for me, psychologically thinking about this trip would be getting to the Arctic Ocean and saying, okay, now I'm going to turn left. I mean, how did that factor in to go that far again?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a sense of putting your head around it right from the very start, which is amazing how, you know, you can do a long day hike and you think you're only a mile from the car and you realize it's 2 miles and how crushing that can be. So I think a little bit of that is just having and there was a little bit of that at the end of the trip where things were going smoothly for quite a while. And then we started to get hit with weather and turned around and had to do detours and sort of ran really low on food. And it felt a little like that, like, oh, we've gone so far and we're so close, but really we're still hundreds of miles and winter's coming. And so there was a bit of that, the finish line getting, you know.
And also from the Arctic coast, that was sort of our reward. You'll get to see a little bit of footage from the Mackenzie Delta tonight, and that was definitely not a high point of the trip. So reaching the Arctic Ocean felt like a huge reward, and the Brooks Range was the part of the trip that we thought would be most likely to have cut off if we had to leave something behind. And so the fact that we were on schedule enough that we might actually be able to get to see Anwar and a lot of the crest of the Brooks Range was certainly temptation enough.
What surprised you two most about this trip?
I can start with one thing that surprised me. Thinking about some of these incredible wilderness areas and the fact that we were going to be as much as possible, you know, traveling in the backcountry, so off-road and off-trail basically the entire way, I hadn't really thought about the human factor and how much people were going to play a role in our trip. So we didn't see people very frequently, but when we did, we had some really incredible experiences. People were so generous with us, and it was also really neat to be able to see people's own connections to the places they called home. So that was something that I took away without really expecting it.
Patrick?
Yeah, for us, I mean, the fact that it more or less worked out, oftentimes I have to sort of pinch myself to say, oh, wow, it is working and we are making our way, even when some days would seem just so impossible, or we were stuck with storms in the Inside Passage for weeks, and it all seemed to fall apart, but then we'd sort of surge ahead, and at the end, you know, when it finished, you thought, gosh, it seems rare that it would have worked, but it did, so it was special.
It seems, I think of that cliche, it's not the journey, it's the journey, not the destination. Does that ring true?
Absolutely, yeah. I think the destination was sort of this thing out in the distance, like Pat was saying, that you know, it helps to wrap your head around a goal, because if you don't, then there's plenty of days where it seemed more logical to quit. But, yeah, the experiences along the way were certainly a lot more important than getting to Kotzebue.
And how long is the actual film? We're taking
lots
of footage.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to sort of mix just slides and pictures with stories, and then we'll show a few different sections, basically like 5 to 10 minute videos intermixed with each of us speaking is the way we're going to do it tonight.
All right. Dan, will you give us the details once again?
Yeah. We'd love for you to join us tonight at the Rockwell at 7 o'clock. So come on down. Bring $10 to get in, and you'll get a free beer with that, and there'll be a bar there as well. So come have a beer and see this incredible presentation.
Well, it sounds great. Are we missing anything, anyone?
Just you guys until you show up.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing everyone tonight.
All right, Caroline, Patrick, and Dan, thanks for coming in today. I'm going to spin you a song here by Cousin Curtis. He's having a CD release party tomorrow at the Hangar Ballroom. Saturday, May 16th from 7 to 9. Here's a song I thought might be a little apropos, even though you probably didn't use Rhodes, you two, but it's called The Road.
All right, thanks.
Listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, May 15th, 2015. It's about 30 minutes past the hour, and we're just hearing a song there by Cousin Curtis. He's having a CD release party tomorrow at the Hangar Ballroom from 7 to 9 p.m., and it includes that song, This Road, which is on his new CD called Here and Now, so check that out. And other exciting musical news is Molly Lewis is coming up, and she and Marion Call are going to be doing some concerts together. And those are going to kick off around the 19th over at Kindred Post. You can find more at MarionCall.com. And going back to Cousin Curtis, you can always find more information on him on CousinCurtis.com. But here's a song by Marion Call, and it's called I Wish I Were an Alaskan Girl.
Oh, I wish I were real Alaskan girl. I wish that I could hold my beer. I could wear hip waders in summer and heels at 10 below. I'd have sexy woolly legs with long and flowing frozen hair. Oh, to be a scout girl in the last frontier, where chicks run the Iditarod and win it. Oh, I could wrench on my own goose, and I would jerk my own moose, and I'd drive a huge domestic truck and actually honk the minute. A little less sugar, a little more spice, a whole lot of fire and even more ice. From Kotzebue to Ketchikan, from Dead Horse to Etue, Alaskan chicks can teach a city girl like me a thing or two. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, because I hear that they kick ass. Oh, it's easy to see why a local woman's in demand. The guys have to queue up for years to get a chance to hold your hand. I'd find me some big burly bush pilot boy. I would hook and reel him in and fiancé him. But if he ever double-crossed me or tried to do me wrong, hesitate to skin, gut, and fillet him. I'd shoot more than a camera at the animals and such. I'd eat Rudolph for breakfast and Bullwinkle for lunch. Oh, Alaskan girls are fearsome and fearless by design. They kill mosquitoes with a look and mess with trusting tourist minds. They're ruggedly handsome in their way. They're wild and free and meant to be that way. So from Jackalope to Juno, raise a glass to a proud and confident and deserving Alaskan woman, you know. And from Beaver to Tatigalik, here's to ladies who understand that their self-image should have nothing whatsoever to do with their shade of lipstick. Oh, I wish I were a real Alaskan girl, but when it comes down to it, for most of us, Los Anchorage is gonna have to do it.
And that's Marion Calls' I Wish I Were a Real Alaskan Girl. She'll be playing 519 over at Kindred Post with the guest Molly Lewis. Find out more at MarionCall.com. And now on this music-studded edition of Juno Afternoon, let's hear a little Bria Skonberg. She's going to be playing tonight, 7:30 at the Jack. I believe this is one of the last chances to catch this amazing quintet. Here you go.
Come into your own, come into your own, come into your own, come into your own. Hey, little sister, don't be shy. Keep your eyes on the road ahead. Whole world's got to meet you, yeah. Come into your own. Come into your own. Come into your own. Come into your own. Say, a band of horses coming your way. Pick up your feet and swallow your breath.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's about 18 minutes until the top of the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 15th of May, 2015. It was on this day in 1891 that Pope Leo XIII issued an official Catholic Church encyclical addressing labor issues. It was called Rerum Novarum, of New Things, and it was the original foundation of Catholic social teaching. He said in his letter that while the Church defends certain aspects of capitalism, including the right to private property, the free market cannot go unrestricted, that there is a moral obligation to pay a fair and a living wage. And he told employers not to look upon their workers as their bondsmen, that it was never okay to cut wages, and told them to be mindful that to exercise pressure upon the indigent and the destitute for the sake of monetary gain and to gather profit out of the need of another is condemned by all laws, human and divine. It's the birthday of the man who wrote one of the most famous books ever, The Wizard of Oz, L. Frank Baum, born in Chittenango, New York, on this day in 1856. His book first published in 1900. L. Frank Baum was a socialist, and he wrote, "There were no poor people in the land of Oz because there was no such thing as money, and all property of every sort belonged to the ruler. Each person was given freely by his neighbors whatever he required for his use, which is as much as anyone may reasonably desire." It was on this day in 1886 that Emily Dickinson died at the age of 55. Emily Dickinson, who had written, "Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves and immortality." She had made her sister promise to burn all of her letters when she died, but she didn't say what to do with her notebooks, 40 notebooks that contained nearly 1,800 poems that she had written. And it's the birthday of Catherine Ann Porter, born in Indian Creek, Texas, 1890, who said, "I started out with nothing in the world but a kind of passion, a driving desire. I don't know where it came from, and I don't know why. But this thing between me and my writing is the strongest bond I have ever had." Catherine Ann Porter, who wrote Flowering Judas and other stories, Pale Horse, Pale Rider, and her big bestseller of 1962, Ship of Fools. Here's a poem for today, William Wordsworth, lines from his long poem, The Prelude. "When from our better selves we have too long been parted by the hurrying world and droop, sick of its business, of its pleasures tired, how gracious, how benign is solitude. Hermit deep in the bosom of the wilderness, votary in vast cathedral where no foot is treading and no other face is seen kneeling at prayer, or watchman on the top of lighthouse beaten by Atlantic waves." Lines from The Prelude by William Wordsworth. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by LegalZoom, providing legal solutions for business owners, including corporate filings and legal plans featuring attorney contract review and tax advice. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
I am a storyteller. My life is a story. My history, my culture, my actions are all part of my story. You are a storyteller too. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence or is acting violently, we can change your story. We can stop the violence. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, May 15th. It's about 12 minutes until the top of the hour, and I've been joined in the studio by Buck Willoughby. He's the co-president of the board of the Juno Co-op Preschool and a parent of Paxton. Welcome to the show, Buck.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. So you are having Family Farm Day tomorrow.
That's right.
At Swampy Acres, right?
Yeah, it's, I believe, our fifth year with the Family Farm Day. And it's a great event. It's a fundraiser for the preschool, and we're really thankful for Swampy Acres for donating their space and time for us to be able to host this great community event.
Cool. So that's tomorrow from 11 to 4. Let's talk about that more in a minute. But before we do that, tell us a little bit about the Juno Co-op Preschool. Where are you located, and how do you teach there?
Well, the Juno Co-op Preschool is located in the Federal Flats at 400 West 11th Street, and you can reach us at 586-2656 or junocooppreschool.com if you have any questions.
And you're in the basement of the Northern Lights Church,
That's correct, the basement of the church there, and we've been there for several years, a long time. And at the school, we really value the play as the child's natural way of learning. It's not a very curriculum-heavy-based. There's a lot of different activities that they do every day. They're always changing. They're very sensory-based. And they're not limited by time. They're able to play with things for as long as their attention allows them to.
Okay. And what is the age span for preschool these days?
So they're 3 to 5-year-olds. We have some 5-year-olds that missed the cutoff for kindergarten. So we have a few older kids, but primarily it's 3 and 4-year-olds, and there's a Tuesday-Thursday class, and then there's a Monday-Wednesday-Friday class, and it goes from 9 a.m. till noon on those days, and it is a parent-led organization, so the parents are, it's not a daycare, they're expected to have a job, whether it be making Play-Doh or being on the board or involved in some of these, we do a lot of fundraising, so involved in the fundraising that we do throughout the year, and it's a great organization. We've got a parent on the board right now who was a student there herself when she was a child, so it's a staple of the community for sure.
It's been around for a while, it sounds like. How many students would you say you have?
Right now, I think we have near 40. We have the capacity to have 40 full-time students, and I believe 4 to 8 subs. And we do have open enrollment is open right now for the fall, and we do have from what I know, at least 2 spaces in the Monday, Wednesday, Friday class and up to 5 spaces. So please go to junocoopreschool.com or you can look at us on Facebook or call 586-2656 if you have any questions.
Or maybe even come out and meet you in person tomorrow at the Family Farm Day at Swampy Acres.
At the Family Farm Day. It's a great event. It is a fundraiser. It's $5 per person. And, you know, if you're carrying somebody, if you have a kid, you know, that's being carried, of course, we're not going to have to, you know, they don't have to pay to get in. But it's just a wonderful event for the kids. It is a fundraiser for our program, and there's lots of animals there. You know, first I want to thank Swampy Acres. Joanne and Jim started it in 1974 as basically a co-op for feed buying for the animals, and that's essentially what they are still today. I mean, it's their private residence, but they run their co-op. They're open for business from Tuesday to Friday from 10 to 6 and Saturday 10 to 4 as a place to go buy feed. And, you know, chickens are like the new super pet. Everybody wants them. So that's a lot of people are going there to get their chickens and get their feed. And you can go there and you can get bunnies both for pets and for meat. We won't tell that to the kids. But they do have that available. And, yeah, just any of your animal needs.
Sounds good. And so I saw on the description there's going to be like a petting zoo, a grooming and feeding station. What else?
Oh, there's just tons of things. You know, we have lots of animals. We've got rabbits and chicks that you can touch and hold. We've got piglets And I don't, unless you're really quick, I don't think you can hold them. They're going to be running around, but a lot of fun to see, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll even let you get a little close to them. There's going to be adult chickens that you can, the kids can feed corn to. There's miniature horses that you can pet and groom. There's peacocks and even a burro. So a lot of animals. And there's a great obstacle course in the kid in the barn. Wendy, the daughter of Joanne and Jim, and they're essentially Joanne and Jim's grandkids are Juneau Co-op Preschool alumni. They're in second and fifth grade now, and they are testing, and I'm sure they helped design the obstacle course in the barn, which is a huge hit.
Okay, it sounds like a lot of fun. This is from 11 to 4 tomorrow at Swampy Acres. I think everyone knows where it is, but why don't you describe just in case they don't?
Yeah, Swampy Acres, it used to be out the road. Now it's just past Safeway and past the Brotherhood Bridge and Don Abel's as you're heading north before you go to Auk Bay, and it's at 11 Mile. It's on the right-hand side. Really important this year, there is construction there, so please don't park on the road. There's plenty of parking right up at the Swampy Acres facility itself. So pull in there first. There will be overflow parking. There'll be someone to help guide you there if that area is full. But please pull in there first. Please don't park on the street with the construction going on. You know, that's just not an option this year. And a lot of times people park on the street and they don't realize that there is parking and plenty of it right up at the Swampy Acres itself.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun, Buck. Are we missing anything you want to add?
Well, you know, I just want to say that it's a great event, and I really want to give some special thanks out to Joanne, Jim, and Wendy at Swampy Acres. I want to thank Bryce Kidd and CCON. They're going to help us with some signage and make sure that it's safe for everybody there getting in. I want to thank Christ Lutheran Church and Family Practice for allowing us to use their spaces as overflow parking. I really want to thank all our parent volunteers. At the co-op preschool, it takes a lot of work coming in and preparing and working and cleaning up for this event. I just want to mention that is tomorrow, Saturday, May 16th from 11 to 4 p.m. It's $5 per person. You know, if you have a bigger family and you maybe can't afford that and you really want to be there, you know, we're not going to turn you away. Come in, give what you can. It is a fundraiser, but, you know, we want to make sure that anybody can come and see all these neat animals and get the experience to be on a farm.
All right, Buck Willoughby, co-op president or co-president of the board of the Juneau Co-op Preschool. Thanks for coming in today, and looks like that's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Scott. We'll see you there.
All right, and now we're going to go out with the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They're going to be closing down Juneau Jazz and Classics for the big festival finale dance party fun at 7:30 tomorrow at Centennial Hall. Here they are.
A virgin isle with digga digga doo digga doo doo. Digga digga doo digga doo. Swing it.
Well, thank you for tuning into a Juneau afternoon on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Let's take a look at the weather. sometimes this isn't so fun, but right now, I'll tell you what. So let's see. Tomorrow, sunny, highs 62 to 72. Sunday, sunny, highs around 69. And it looks like going into next week, even Wednesday through Thursday, partly cloudy, highs around 70. Currently 65 at the Juneau Airport.
I'm so very dig-a-dig-a-doo, my nature. You're gonna lose your pop, so let those funny people smile. How can there be a virgin I'll be dig-a-dig-a-doo, dig-a-doo-doo.
This is the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy. They're playing tomorrow night, Saturday, at the Centennial Hall. Tonight is Bria Skomberg Quintet at the Jack, same time, 7:30. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. We'll be here same time, same place on Monday. Stay tuned for the news.